It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
They could have knocked it over and put it back up and not told me.
Cats can do that.
Yes. Okay, I have to finish this one thing in my game right here, so talk amongst yourselves.
Your game?
Yes. There's a mobile game I play on my phone called, Dragon Soul.
Dragon Soul?
Soul, yes. All one word.
And it's about dragon souls?
Among other souls. It's about a lot of souls, but yes, also dragons.
It's about souls, then?
Yeah, well, your primary method for getting new characters is getting enough of their soul stones, and we have this weird backstory of how they all lost their souls and got, like, possessed by the evil end boss guy.
Mm.
So you free them from his power, and then they're like, hey, if you get my soul stones, I'll join you later. And what that means is if you collect enough of them, then you can, like, put them in your party and stuff like that.
Mm.
And there's like 20,000 different ways that they level up. So there's like their level, but there's also what rank they are, and there's also what equipment they have, and what skills are unlocked, and what level of things are unlocked. So it's just a constant hamster wheel, like most of these kind of games. And it's free to play. Of course, you can pay money and make things go a lot easier, but...
I see.
Yes.
Like real life.
Yes.
It's hard unless you have money to make it go easier.
Exactly. And when you think about the progress you're making, you realize you're just going in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I need you to do me a favor. And you're not going to like it. But it's not going to involve any other person, so no delivery drivers or anything. Behind you, behind your chair, is an outlet. I need you to unplug some things and plug some things.
Why?
Because we're still, you'll note, on the old laptop, and it's getting really shitty, and I don't actually trust the charge to last the whole time. I thought I did.
So it's not plugged in?
It is not plugged in. Normally a full battery is fine for a single episode, but... Alright, sort of behind the screen there, you should see an outlet.
What am I unplugging?
The top... That's a yellowy clear thing. You're unplugging that, and you're plugging in a black cord that's sitting down there that's the computer. Yay! Well done. Hello, everyone. Welcome to I Make William Do Stuff. Don't worry, we didn't order food tonight. The only podcast in the world where somebody makes William do stuff on a podcast, I assume.
Pretty much.
Neither of Grape Shot ever made you do stuff, right?
No.
Yeah. Just this one.
This is
only one in the world. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 371.
He's the aforementioned William from what the stuff we were just talking about.
Right.
So, okay, I'll get the thing out of the way. For those of you just joining us, this is how it works. I'm mean to him, and he keeps coming to my house. We have a hat. It's magic.
Wait, you aren't going to stop there?
No.
That seems like that's everything a person needs to know.
That's the too long didn't read version.
Okay.
For about an hour. Sorry. There we go. The official version. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool folks that like me, and apparently don't like William, because otherwise why would you tune in to just hear me be mean to him?
Right, exactly.
But people like yourselves, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its emasculating servants, emasculating, not emasculated, because I feel like we are a constant threat to the modern hegemonic stereotype of masculinity.
You think so?
So, in their eyes, we are emasculating servants. Also, when we meet listeners, like in live, we give them a big hug and castrate them. So.
What?
Okay, when I meet.
Okay.
Listeners live. Yeah. Guy listeners, obviously. I mean, so. So we emasculating servants, physically, I mean, figuratively and literally. Draw the note cards out of the hat. That's the important thing.
Yeah, that's.
Read them on the air. Right. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour, except often not any of that. That's the show.
That's the show.
So how's your week been? It's only been 1 week this time.
We watched the Netflix original TV series Lost in Space.
How is it?
Well, we liked it. I mean, the only thing that bothered me about it was occasionally these science fiction things do things that are like mistakes from a science perspective.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not a mistake. It's an artistic, like, you know, everybody knows there's no sound in space. So
yeah,
when you see sound in space, that's they're making an artistic choice.
Yeah.
But other times it seemed like a mistake, and it was kind of annoying. But no, I thought it was good. I hope they make another season.
It's funny, Trish and I don't know if I talked about this before in here or not. Trish and I both have an issue with the science involved with Ant-Man.
Sure, we have talked about that a little bit.
But what the hell? We're fine with the rest of it? I'm even fine with the Hulk, which is the most bullshit human science thing. Like, I just accept. But Ant-Man, oh! All the shit they pull in this new one. Well, they show in the trailer, and he shrinks the building down to luggage.
Building. Yeah,
and
we I'm talked like, about that.
That would still be because the same weight.
Because it's so in your face.
I don't know.
It seems. Don't you? Like, I mean, the whole. The Hulk thing. When you first hear about it, you go, oh, that's ridiculous. But then it's over. Because it's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just
well,
what
and
it
because
is.
In many ways, that was the start of the trope.
Sure.
That radiation gives you superpowers.
But with the Ant-Man thing, it's constantly coming up like, wait a minute, so how is this? Because you think you know how it works, but then they do something that says, wait, no, it doesn't
maybe
work like
that.
Maybe
it is really, because maybe they think they're really clever, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, it's not like in the Hulk you've got situations where
gamma radiation won't allow. I mean, that only happened on the Bill Bixby show if the plot required
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. Where something, it keeps in coming into the story somehow.
Like, yeah.
Like, oh, there's a different radiation, so now he's going to turn into a different kind of monster or something like that.
Oh, that would be cool, though. I'd watch that.
Oh, it's cosmic radiation, so now he's going to be a
he's
little
the thing, because of course he's the thing.
A little purple monster. I don't know.
But still has the strength equivalent to one Paul Rudd for some reason.
Yeah, I think it's
ants.
I think it's because it's constantly a thing as it's going on, and you're just reminded of it all the time. Because
it is the details, not the details, but like the specifics of it do have to come up a lot to explain what's going on. I guess that could be an answer. Because, yeah, it's been bugging both of us that it bugs us.
Well, and another thing is,
because my brother-in-law just turned to us and said, so you're really annoyed about the science in your superhero movie. And I was like, shit.
I think you're just always reminded of it. I think that's the problem there. And speaking of, we did see, it seems like since I saw you, we saw Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, you had not seen that? Oh!
No. I'm pretty sure we've seen it since.
And?
Well, I mean, I like Taika Waititi in other stuff he's done.
Yeah,
so obviously I'm going to like that aspect of it.
Well, and he was my favorite character.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Man.
I was doing so many impressions of him right after, and everybody either hadn't seen the movie or saw it with me and didn't think it was that funny.
Oh, that was pretty funny.
Hey.
Hey, man.
I'm going to get on this spaceship. You want to come?
You're welcome. So, I mean, I liked it because of that mostly, but it's like, well, I mean, does this feel much like a Thor movie? I mean, I don't really care about these characters. I don't care if they make a movie that is totally against their origin in the comic books or anything like that. So, but it seems like everyone was okay with it, so it was fine. I didn't wild about it. I just thought it was okay.
The one decision that annoyed me was how they did the Grandmaster, and that was completely overwhelmed by the fact that Jeff Goldblum just owned that part.
Okay, yeah.
So that I could just watch a movie of him just going through his day in that character.
I mean, I liked what everybody did, basically.
Thompson did great.
Yeah, I thought everyone was great.
It's my favorite instance of Hulk anywhere. Mostly as Banner, but just in general, that's the best time I've had with that character in the entire MCU. Not having seen the Ed Norton movie yet, which I do need to fix.
I like the Ed Norton movie okay, but I don't think on screen we've ever seen Hulk like that before.
No.
Ever.
No.
And so that was interesting. And I liked Mark Ruffalo
when he wasn't the Hulk.
I liked all that stuff was really good. I think I felt a little sorry for what's his name? Chris
Thor?
Yeah. Because the film didn't really take the character very seriously.
No.
Which is fine. I didn't have a problem with that. But again, a lot of superhero movies, like most of the Iron Man movies, even though Tony Stark is joking around and stuff, they take the character fairly seriously.
Yeah, but it's easy to do because he's just a dashing cad in the present day.
Yeah, yeah.
And what MCU is doing, for better or for worse, but I think financially it's working for them, is pushing everybody to modern day, post-millennial snark jokes.
Mm.
And that's why, as Captain America spends more time, I mean, you could say, he spent more time on Earth, or, with Thor and Captain America. But as the movies progress, their jokes just sound more and more. Like, if you listen to Thor back in Thor, he can't form a lot of the sentences that he says in Ragnarok.
That's true.
But
it makes me think, though, about how, DC, I don't know what they're thinking, but if they're thinking they have to keep up with Marvel somehow, that's a big mistake.
Well, that's the good news. I don't think they're going that far, because I think Marvel is starting to show that it's swinging too far in that direction. So DC definitely used, or Warner Brothers definitely used Be More Marvel-like, both, I think, for Wonder Woman and Suicide Squad a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going crazy, because they're still planning these, heavy, serious things.
Well, see, I guess I feel like Marvel can get by with things like that because of the way Marvel just generally is, whereas I'm not sure DC can. I mean, even Star Wars, some of the criticism of The Last Jedi was, what are you trying to be, like a Marvel movie? Because there were a few things like
And
it's like, well, Star Wars can't really do that.
And I think this is what happens after the eighth one. You see this in horror movies too. Even if the series, like these huge long ones, the series starts as a serious freaky horror movie.
Yeah.
Once you've gotten past four or five, it even is listed as horror, comedy, stuff like that.
That's true.
A lot of it is just jokes flashing. But I mean, watch the original Friday the 13th. It's not good, but watch it. It's trying hard. Then watch Jason Takes Fucking Manhattan. Like, at that, they've clearly given up with scaring you. It's about the gore, and it's about silly jokes.
Sure.
I think he picks up some street urchin and flings him around or some shit.
And Kate Blanchett, is that right?
Yes.
Really good.
And her stuntwoman for that, Zoe Bell, who...
No kidding? Yep. Zoe Bell did that?
Yep.
I should have known.
I also didn't know. I never watched the Grindhouse double feature thing that Tarantino and Rodriguez did because I didn't want to and it didn't look good. And I'm glad I didn't. But recently I was looking at the Wikipedia article of it. I didn't know she was in Death Proof as herself.
Oh.
She played stuntwoman Zoe Bell in it. That was kind of cute.
I was a fan of her stunt work before she was ever in anything. And I think I've only seen like one thing that she was in, and I wasn't that impressed with it. But, you know, somehow she got famous for being a stunt person anyway. I don't remember how. Yeah. Did she do some stuff for the Xena or something?
I think so. Show? The first place I remember ever seeing her, or the first place I am told I remember seeing her, because I didn't at the time, is in The Road Warrior.
Mm.
She plays the one who's all in like white. And it's not a big part, but it stood out. Other than that, I think she mostly makes her money as a stunt woman, sort of always has. She was either in Xena, or I think she might have been in Farscape. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah,
Friends basically introduced me to her, because I have a friend who 80% of whether she likes or hates any piece of TV or film is based on whether or not there is one or more actresses that she likes in it.
Mm.
Not even necessarily how well they do or what part they're in, but if it has an actress that she likes, there is an overwhelming chance she's going to like it regardless of the rest of the quality.
Well,
it annoys the shit out of me. We fight about it all the time. But anyway, so she was, there was something, and I want to say it was Farscape, that she really liked something because it had Zoe Bell in it. I'm like, who the hell is that? And that's how I learned. And since then, I've seen her in other stuff. She was in Whip It, and I forget, like I said, I think she's been in one of the other shows, but she shows up in places now, acting sometimes.
Well, one of the films I saw her in, she was good in it as an actor, just the film itself wasn't very good.
Yeah.
I mean, she can act as
frequently,
far as I can tell.
She's the stunt woman for a lot of, like, famous female action
stuff.
And she's really good at it. And she's a perfectly good actress, too, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But the film she was in wasn't that great for... I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
But what about your week?
Let me see. Well, I think the biggest part is we went to St. Louis for the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
The very next day. The producer's coming through. Say hi.
Hi.
That was it. They say hi back.
Thanks.
Say it. Say it out loud. You know you want to. Apparently, what was the thing where I was like, if somebody responded while they were listening, my mind would be blown? I can't remember what it was, but my boss the next day was like, your mind is blown. Because apparently she did.
Did she?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
What was I talking about?
I don't know. Oh, you were talking about St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, St. Louis. So we went to St. Louis. Oh, he hasn't seen the laser pointer in a while. Baby, you should come see this. William's getting Twiglet to play with the laser pointer. I haven't seen him do this in years. Our trip to St. Louis was good. I've never been there other than the airport.
Well, yeah, we talked about that.
And I think I like it. I think I want to go back. It's also a shorter trip than I think it is. Seriously, he hasn't played like that in so long. When he was a little baby, we played this all the time.
Halfway up the wall.
But he hasn't done that in ages because he's so old and tired. This is so sweet. You gotta keep it moving so he doesn't figure out that he can't actually get it. They love the near miss.
Can't.
Oh my god, this is good radio.
He just can't stand it.
Yeah. But they won't ever go. Like, I've tried. Because I'm an asshole. I've tried to point it at. No, just put it back on. Point it on another cat, or pointed on Trish.
Right, that's what I was kind of trying to do.
Which is funny, because back in the day, my brother-in-law told my other brother-in-law to point the laser pointer that we were using to mess with the dog at his crotch, and he did, and the dog totally went for it.
Oh, no.
And we were like, we want to feel bad for you, but he's like, no, I asked for it. He wanted to see what happened. But with the cats, I can't get them to jump in anybody like that. I can throw a toy and make them do it sometimes, but I get in trouble with my wife. St. Louis.
St. Louis
was very cool.
Tell me all about it.
We went to see Rhea Butcher, who, just up front, I'm going to say here, Rhea Butcher has now decided that they are using they, them, their pronouns.
Oh.
They have decided that they are sort of non-binary conformist. I have known them all this time as she, and I fuck it up a lot. So does Trish. It's taking getting used to. I just want to say that up front so that you can disregard times when I fuck it up during this episode.
Okay.
But sorry, it was great. I now have still never met them, but I think I have scared them twice.
I seem to recall that story from before.
Exactly. That was the first time. Yes. When we saw them and their wife, Cameron Esposito, we were leaving, and they were coming through this other way, both of them, and they were, like, sneaking by, and, you know, you don't stop and say anything because they're trying to hide and stuff like that. And I was like, we love you, and that was it. And they were like, thanks. But, like, looked really, like, nervous about it, because I look like me. Well, this time, so the club venue, we are told, has very limited seating.
Okay.
I don't like this.
Sure.
So I'm like, we're getting there early. Show starts at 8, doors open at 7. I'm like, okay, we end up getting there quite a bit. We get out there like 6:30. But eventually a line does form, and we're in the front. And it's fun, because there were people out front trying to get people to sign a petition to put medical marijuana law on the ballot this year in Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
And so we talked with them about that and about, like, movies and stuff like that. And then one of the people who works inside came out for a cigarette break, and so he was talking with all of us, so we had a great time out there. But while we're out there, the door's on my left. I'm looking down the sidewalk. I'm talking with somebody, and Trish comes up over to me, and she says, turn 90 degrees to your left. She says it very softly. So I turn 90 degrees to my left. There's Rhea Butcher, like, coming in to do... And I say what anybody would say in that instance. I say, and I stand there, stock still, my eyes as big as saucers, and don't move except my head just slowly following her as we make eye contact several times. They, like, the door's locked or whatever, so the guy, like, they open it, she goes in, and I'm like, have a good show. Like, I literally said it like that. And she's like, yeah, thanks. Ran in. And here's the thing. So we were in the line, and we were the first in line. So we got the front seats, literally front row center. I'm there.
Sure.
So I was wondering if something would come. But they must have good lights, because she never... I did say there was a participatory bit where I said something, but that was it, so... And I didn't say it like this, so she might not have recognized. Yeah, I don't do well under pressure. Anyway.
You don't strike me as the type to get starstruck, though. I mean, maybe there's a type, I don't know.
No. You're right in the sense that I very much don't believe... I think that's dumb, and I don't like it, and I try not to do it.
Sure.
However, under that... is another layer that still thinks I'm going to reconnect with Kumail Nanjiani sometime over our college years, even though we weren't like friends then. there's a starfucker buried deep inside of me, and over the top of that is just disapproval, because I'm like, it's dumb. Live your own life. And who genuinely hates, like, the existence of people like the Kardashians. Like that's a thing. But I'm like, I know. And no, I like to draw the line there. If I had the opportunity to, like, meet and hang out with the Kardashians, I feel like I would refuse that. But a lot of others, including ones that, like, I don't even necessarily like that well, but, like...
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who that might be, because then they won't invite me when they hear this podcast. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
When they hear it.
Yeah. such a deluded motherfucker.
No.
Anyway, but we're not even getting... Because, don't get me wrong, Rhea, show, it's great. But that's not the important part. We didn't really do anything else that we were going to, but I had slept horribly the first night, so I'm like, I'm going to take a little nap before we go, and then Trish fell asleep, and... So we skipped it. But we didn't really do anything else, except we did go to 3 meals.
Mm-hmm.
One of which was the first time I've ever referred to something this way, a life-changing meal.
Life-changing.
One of the best meals I've had ever. Changed how I think about food.
What?
Like, it was amazing. And it's all due to an employee of Trisha's, which is nice, who apparently, like, lives there and recommended this place.
Oh, okay.
Is a restaurant called Aya Sofia. It's a Turkish restaurant.
Oh, Turkish, okay.
And it's, I mean, first of all, it's absolute amazing quality food. And they have all sorts of things. If you are vegetarian, if you are vegan, if you are gluten intolerant, or if, like me, you just love a good lamb shank, they can cover everybody.
Wow.
They have a pretty good seafood selection, although we didn't have any of that either. But plenty of vegetarian stuff and all that. Many foods I had had before, hummus, tabbouleh, kibbeh, falafel, obviously. I've never had like this. Like, what would you say are you familiar with tabbouleh?
Yeah.
What would you say the first, like, the primary ingredient in tabbouleh is?
I don't even know. It's like, here, this is tabbouleh, and I eat it. So.
All right. Well, a lot of people would
There's no meat in it, so I eat it.
It was bulgur, because it's...
Oh, bulgur wheat?
Yes, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure, right.
Not with these people. It's parsley. This thing was primarily made of parsley, and there was just a little bulgur in it to sort of make it stick together a little bit.
Huh.
And the spice palettes were amazing. And this is the thing, the precision of the dishes. I swear to you, the chef thinks about what it's going to taste like when you put it in your mouth. He also thinks about what it's going to taste like 10 seconds later. And as you swallow it, like, it had so many layers of flavors that would change, and that, like, you really had to savor each bite. It was ridiculous. And first falafel I've ever had better than Oasis. Oasis has been my best falafel anywhere for ages.
And Oasis is where?
Here in downtown.
Mm. I don't know if I've been there.
Oh, I should go there. They make great hummus and great falafel. And really good vegan french fries that they claim are the best in town. And they're kind of like steak fries, which I don't like, but they are really good, so I don't understand how that works. But they've been my favorite falafel anywhere.
Until now.
Until now. These aren't a lot better, but they're a little bit better. It was just amazing. And yeah, I had this slow-cooked lamb shank with beans and rice that was amazing. And like lamb like I've never had. Just like the pure essence of lamb. It was amazing. And then we had there was this dip that was kind of like tzatziki, but not exactly. That was really simple. You would have said, oh yeah, no, it's like a dill dip or whatever. No, it had such flavor to it. It was amazing. The hummus was spiced in ways I'm not familiar with, and it was really good. Like, for a foodie, this is unbelievable. And yeah, it changed the way I think about eating food. It's a little the My Dinner with Andre thing. Remember when he would go eat at the Buddhist temple or whatever, and it would take 3 hours to eat your food because they'd make you taste each bite? Like, I felt like that was what I was doing here.
But you'd never had an experience like that before?
No.
Huh.
Not that I can recall. I've had single dishes that I'm like, this is, you know, revelatory. Single dishes, but never just an entire meal. And we ordered way too much stuff.
I had one meal like that in my life, and it was at...
Denny's.
No, it was... There's a place in Coralville. God, what was it called? Started with an S, I think. Soul something? Never heard of it?
I don't think so.
I think it was North African cuisine.
Oh. Oh. Wait, that was downtown or that was in Coralville?
No, it was in Coralville, this one.
Oh, you said Coralville, sorry. I was hearing downtown for some reason.
Oh, sorry. No,
A coworker's son... It was his... Owned it, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, it was the first time I ever went... You know, usually, you know, I'm not a foodie, so I go to a restaurant, I eat food, it's whatever. But this was like, it was like an, exp- it's hard to, it's kind of like what you're saying. It was this like an experience that was beyond just eating. You know what I mean?
That it becomes sensual outside of taste almost.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of things going on. And also eating it makes you feel something other than just satiated with
With and your appetite. Loved it so much, and we kept eating. But then long before I was feeling stuffed, I was like, I'm going to stop now. I feel it would be unfair to the food to shove more in there.
Yeah, that's the only time I've ever experienced that. And so that's the only reason when I talk to foodies that I think I have a little idea what they're talking about, because I had that one experience.
And I quite often will have that with a dish.
Yeah.
I've had that many times. But that is just everything about it. And again, like, it very seldom happens where I've had many different hummuses. Like, I've had many different falafel fairly recently.
Sure.
In fact, I had some the night before that were not that good. And it just is also different. And the tabbouleh thing is amazing to me, because I don't like tabbouleh. Except now I love tabbouleh.
I've never heard it.
Green, yeah.
I've never heard of it prepared like that.
It was all parsley. I mean, you looked and it looked like they were polka dots, and those were the individual bulgur.
Sure, I've seen parsley in it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's bone of the ingredients, but that's the thing. It's, you see little specks of parsley.
Yeah.
This one, I saw little specks of bulgur wheat, and I mentioned that one to the... We would not shut up to the waiter, and then eventually the hostess, who's also the owner's wife, came over, and the chef's wife, came over and was talking. And, but I said, like, I've never had it where the primary thing is parsley like that. And he looks at me like I'm an idiot. And this isn't like a cook, like this guy looks like me if I shaved. He's just this dopey dude. I think his name was Malcolm. Like, he's just this guy. He's white as snow. And he just looked at me and said, well, too much bulgur wheat would make it too dry. And I'm not even mad. I'm like, it does. That's why I hate it most of the time. Oh my God. It does make it too dry. Like, everything they were saying was just gospel.
It, but it seems like, though, too, that that's a very American thing to do to the dish, right? Turn up the bulgur in it and turn down the...
I think so, yeah.
That seems like a very American thing to do to it. It's
always a thing. I used to think of tabbouleh, and for a long time I mixed up tabbouleh and couscous, because they were both these circular...
That's right, yeah, me too.
Which is weird, because I hated tabbouleh and I loved couscous, so I got mixed up.
I get them mixed up sometimes, too.
But yeah, it was fucking amazing. This is the weird one. And I'm still putting together pieces of it a week later now, or 5 days later. There was a thing. We ended up ordering this sort of like sampler platter of appetizers to start, because we couldn't decide what we wanted. They also had stuffed grape leaves, which I have never liked. I try them any chance I get in the hopes I will. I've never liked them. I loved these.
Oh, usually do like those.
So weird. But we got this, and they had this thing that we had seen before that it was crispy feta. And what it was they took phyllo dough and they wrapped it around some mascarpone and, ricotta and feta sort of mixed together and wrapped it up. And when he brought it, he's like, here's this, and this is it was some sort of dip thing that was tomato based, and somebody's like, this is our tomato cilantro or whatever. He's like, because people... And he's rolls a lot. Frequently say that the crispy feta is just like Turkish mozzarella sticks. So we figured we had to bring something to dip it in them. And we're like, ha ha, Philistines. Yeah. They're good. That's totally what they are. And that's the thing. I liked them. Trish did not, because she doesn't like ricotta very much. So she ate like, there were three of them. She ate like a bite off of one. I ate the rest. I liked them a lot. They were the shittiest thing there. Like, they did not belong with the rest of it. Like, you know, it was not that. It was just good. And that's the thing. Like, the worst thing by far was pretty tasty, and I would order again. If Sparty's had those things on their takeout menu, I would get them every time we ordered from them. Absolutely.
That's funny.
So that's how amazing that was. But yeah, not too much else around there. The trip, like I said, it's not as far as I feel like it. Like, it's not as far as going to Chicago or Minneapolis.
It isn't?
I think it's a difference of a half hour. I think it's a pretty small difference, but it felt much easier.
Really?
Like, I could see just going for a weekend and not even taking a day off before.
No kidding.
And I definitely want to go back, yeah. Well, at this point, we're like, we just want to go back and eat there.
Well, we wanted to go for a long time.
And it's neat. We didn't do very much, but there's so many things. There's so many free, like, museums and park things. Yeah. There's a district called The Grove that's the Brooklyn of St. Louis, or the Pearl District, if you're from Portland, of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Or it's the hipster section. It's all these clubs and bars and stuff. But it's really fun, and there's neat people there and all that. And yeah, they have botanical gardens we were going to go to. Apparently the zoo, I'm not into zoos. If you're into zoos, apparently the zoo is amazing and free. They also have a science center. There's a ton of stuff. And it's pretty neat.
And it felt like an easy drive, huh?
Compared to other things, yeah.
Yeah.
It felt easier than when we go to Chicago and when we go to Minneapolis.
You know, we'll have to make it a priority. We neither one of us have really been there. It's like, yeah. Like you, I've been to the bus terminal, as I said last time. And so it's like, you know, most places that we've been, we've each been to there before. This is going to be one of the, I mean, you know, most of the, like when we went to Tennessee and we went to the Great Smoky Mountains or whatever, neither one of us had been there before. So, yeah. But like Chicago. That, you know, first time we ever went to Chicago together, we'd both been to Chicago before.
Yeah.
I don't know about Minneapolis, but neither one of us have been really to St. Louis, so we kind of wanted to go.
Okay, if you go, I mean, I don't care if I have to finance it, you got to eat there. And you should make reservations.
I'm sure we'll eat there.
Well, it's not cheap. Although, that's the thing. It was cheaper than I expected. Like, I have paid for some high-priced meat, you know. If it's worth it and it's a one-time thing or whatever, I will spend a lot on that. This was half what I have spent on those.
Huh.
It was still expensive. It was probably on par of when the six of us go to Carlos O'Kelly's. We take the kids, the four adults and the kids,
mm-hmm.
and the wives have margaritas because their lives are much harder than the husbands. It's probably that for that many of us is about what I spent for the two of us. Oh, and we ordered we ordered way too much food. So, it's not crazy. I mean, it is expensive, but it's well worth it.
Sure.
So, yeah, you got to go there. I'm going to cry. And this is the other thing. It's right across the street. We didn't have dessert there. We will next time we go. But we had never been to Ted Drew's frozen custard, which is like a thing. In St. Louis, to the degree that the waiter and the owner's wife told us, oh, yeah, you got to go. Yeah, don't have dessert here. You got to go there. Trisha was kind of shocked about that. And it is really good frozen custard.
Yeah.
I had, in honor of the overall Turkish theme, I just had a scoop of pistachio. And apparently when you just get a scoop, they whip it like it's a blizzard or something. I think they call them a concrete, but they just did that for me automatically. And Trish had a tart cherry sundae that was pretty tasty too. So that's fun. All right. So that's it. So remember how I'm not playing in video games right now?
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, so I can work on writing and reading instead. And I finished 100,000 Kingdoms, the first book in that trilogy. Very much enjoyed it. Really a lot. And I'm excited for the next one. I haven't jumped on the next one because I don't like to do that. And also because apparently the next one is different characters' story in that same setting. Like, it relates and intertwines. But And the characters I loved. So I'm like, I don't have that, you know, need.
Right.
But I will this weekend, I'm sure. But anyway, yeah, kind of playing a video game a little bit. Back in the day, when the PlayStation 2 was a very new thing, one of the early games to come out was a game called Kinetica. And it was a racing game. And it was set in the future, and all the people were in these super amazing jumpsuit things, and the suits had wheels so that you could hold them in front and in back on your legs, and you'd be a motorcycle, basically, and you could drive around, you could do tricks and stuff like that. And it was set to a bunch of, like, techno music. I loved it. And I played it a lot. And, like, no one else ever had heard of it or bothered or anything. I remember seeing commercials for it, but, yeah, nobody cared. It didn't do super well. But it did well enough that they put it on PlayStation 4 Network for $10 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I ended up finding out about that recently. And my friend Ben was teasing me about it. He's like, you're going to go home tonight. You're just going to buy Connecticut. And I'm like, no. I'll probably buy it eventually, but that doesn't mean I'll necessarily do it now or that I'll play it. Until they went home that night and started playing. And it's fun. It's harder than I remembered. Because back in that day, there was not nearly as much control over the difficulty and things. So they don't play easy on you at all. There's like three seasons of tracks. And the first season, you just have to come in third or better in every single race. And if you don't, you have to retry until you do, but you have a limited number of retries before you can even advance the next track in that same season. And then season two, not particularly harder or easier, but then you have to come in second or better in every single race. Season three, first or better in every single race. You just have to do it a lot and get good at it. And I think I was at one point, but I try that again. So I haven't been playing a ton of that. It's not like it's got a campaign or something. But I have been playing that a little bit, so I've been cheating. Important news. For those of you out there who, like me, spent your formative years watching Iron Chef. Not the weird-ass Food Network American thing they have now. The original Fuji Network Japanese show, Iron Chef. Are you out there? I hope that you are, because I watched so much. It was so much better. Have you ever seen any version of Iron Chef?
No.
You familiar at all with Iron Chef?
No.
Oh, my God. 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 Okay. Now, there's two versions of this.
Okay.
One version, an eccentric millionaire in Japan, who was a bit of a gourmet, decided that he was getting bored with what he was eating, and he spent his fortune to build a stadium called Kitchen Stadium. And among other things, it had these two giant open kitchens in it. And then he located throughout Japan, I guess. Maybe the world. I don't know. They're all, I think one guy's Chinese and the other's Japanese. But anyway, the best chefs from each style of cook, Japanese, French, Chinese, that kind of thing, and brought them here and called them his Iron Chefs. And then he invited challengers, chefs from all over the world, actually all over the world, like real people who have been like own restaurants and crap, to come here and challenge one of their Iron Chefs to a cooking battle.
And two chefs enter. But
yeah, whose cuisine will reign supreme? And each time there is a secret theme ingredient, and he tells no one until it happens, and that ingredient has to be the focus of every dish they make. And it's Japan. So sometimes it's stuff like broccoli or duck. And other times it's stuff like dried abalone or fermented soybeans. And so it gets, or salmon roe, like things like that. And then they have an hour. They cook a bunch of dishes. There's a set of celebrity judges. And they try all the dishes first from the challenger and then from the Iron Chef, and they secretly vote, and somebody wins. Mm-hmm. And it's a big deal.
Okay.
And they made hundreds of these.
And it's entertaining.
Yes. And it's fascinating to watch the cooking and stuff like that. And it's also just fascinating to watch the 90s Japanese TV of it. there's the because they announce the whole time they're announcing, and there's a guy on the floor, and he always is very polite, interrupting. He always says, Fukui-san? And Fukui has to say, go ahead, Ota, or whatever. Like, every time. And sometimes he did it 10 seconds ago, but he's always like, Fukui-san? It's like, yes, Ota. Like, and it's all terribly dubbed. It's all dubbed. and the chairman, that's what the eccentric millionaire is called, is the most flamboyant motherfucker you've ever seen. Because he can, because he's the chairman. That's the first story. Second story is, the Fuji Network said, hey, let's make a cooking fighting show, but also we're Japan, so let's make it a little bit crazy. Okay, I know, we'll have an eccentric millionaire character. Okay, who will we get to play him? How about the guy who plays Jean Valjean in the Japanese version of Les Mis? All right, we can do that. All right, here we go. And you went from there.
I didn't know there was a Japanese version.
Hilarious shit. So, this went on for a long time. It got a resurgence when it came over here in syndication.
Okay.
People were into it. I once had a board game for it. They did a couple, like, in the early 2000s, they did a couple of, like, mini-series of things where they'd bring it back and all this. But then eventually, Food Network bought the rights to do it in America. And their version is that Chairman has a nephew who inherited his fortune and his love of food. But he's been raised in America, so he doesn't have he speaks English and everything like that. And I got to learn what it must feel like to Japanese people watching the original. Because I totally bought that guy as the eccentric millionaire, because I didn't know who the fuck he was. Years later, I find out he's Jean Valjean. And I think Kaneki in the touring company of Grease in Japan is fucked up. But I've heard him sing since, though. Gorgeous. But in the U.S., the chairman's nephew, a lot of people didn't recognize, totally could buy he was the chairman's nephew, but it's fucking actor and martial artist Mark Dacascos.
Oh.
So I'm like, no, it's not. He's not Japanese. And he, no. It's Mark Dacascos. That's the Indian dude from Brotherhood of the Wolf. That's the guy who played Brandon Lee in the TV show, because Brandon Lee was dead, and also it was a shitty TV show. I'm like, it's Mark Dacascos. Mark Dacascos is the character from the best movie entitled Drive. There's a lot of movies called Drive. His and Kadeem Hardison is the best. So I'm like, it's Mark Dacascos. Come on. Canadian action TV's answer to Lou Diamond Phillips. But no, I love Mark Dacascos. So that was really weird. And it's become a thing now. And Alton Brown, it does the commentating and everything. And so they've actually had several seasons of the next Iron Chef. That's like a reality show, vote 'em off the island kind of show. Mm-hmm. And whoever's last becomes the next Iron Chef. Mm-hmm. We watched a couple seasons of that and then got tired of that. So yeah, now there's a lot of American Iron Chefs that you compete against and stuff like that. But it's not nearly as cool, because over here, first of all, they don't go crazy. And second of all, it's just American. It's just TV. You've seen TV. And the ingredients are things like pizza dough or hamburger or shit like this. And I'm like, that's not fun. I want the episode where French Iron Chef Hiroyuki Sakai made goddamn salmon roe ice cream. And he fried bits of the salmon skin and made ears so that the little scoop looked like a bunny. And I believe it sucked and they hated it. But there was also a different time where I think Iron Chef Chinese, Chen Li, or Iron Chef, Li Chen, made squid ink ice cream, and it was a huge, because squid was the ingredient that time, and it was a huge hit with the judges, who include people like genuine lesser members of national government, actors and actresses, occasionally a food critic, and for quite a lot of episodes, a celebrity fortune teller.
Oh.
Weird as shit. Love that show. Anyway, now that I've explained this to this man here, those of you who know, you can't get it anymore. It's really annoying. It's no place. Well, I found out that it is someplace now. Go to YouTube. Type in Iron Chef. You will find, among many other things, somebody's made a playlist of 471 episodes of the original show with the original English dubbing. Some of the music has been taken out. I think for a while, the syndication issues, there was a fight over music rights, and so one version played the background music and one didn't. But otherwise, same damn show. Watched episode last night. Get on that. It's awesome. I thought there was another thing, but I took up so much time with Iron Chef. No. I can do this quick, though. But then we have to get a question. Get a question ready. Watched the movie Infinity Baby last night.
Have we not
talked about this before?
That sounds really familiar.
It was a comedy that we knew coming that's set in the near future where abortion finally became illegal, but as a political maneuver, the right gave stem cell research back to the left, and so pharmaceutical companies and shit started doing all these experiments on babies with this shit. And in the process, about 1,000 babies ended up stuck in a state where they do not age, and so the drug company founded a subsidiary that is their thing is to find homes for these babies. And it's comedy, and it has a ton of people in it. It's got Nick Offerman, it's got Megan Mullally, it's got Martin Starr, it's got the dude who played the brother on Grounded for Life, the dad's brother, whose name I can never remember. It's got a huge gap. It's crap. It's absolute crap. They do a perfectly good job, but the movie makes no sense. The story goes nowhere. It's crap. You can skip it. I'm sorry to say that. And you can spend 70 minutes to find out for yourself, but it's pretty dumb. Trish fell asleep, and I was like, you don't need to rewatch it. So, skip Infinity Baby. All right, go.
Beth wants to know, how long do you expect you'll live?
And the sniper's bullet.
When I was young, when I was in high school, I guess I should be specific about that.
Because he was never young.
He
was 42 when he was born.
What does that mean, when I was young? I mean, it could be when I was 20. I mean, I'm, 49.
In my salad days.
When I was in high school, at some point, for some reason, I don't know, I got this overwhelming impression that I was not going to live very long.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a time frame or anything like that, but I expected it would be, I wasn't sure that I'd survive till I was 40. Again, it was just a weird feeling, but
probably the meth.
I don't know what it was, but it was strong enough and surprising enough that I remember it, so I can tell you about it.
So you had a brief goth phase.
No, it didn't affect me at all. It's just that I remembered thinking that at that period of at that point in time. But of course, that's not what happened.
I always thought I was going to die. The night before my tonsillectomy, I did a guided meditation because I was a hardcore hippie pagan then. And based on the results of that, I was under the impression that I was going to die on the operating table. And I even wrote messages to loved ones and stuff that night.
Isn't that odd that you get a feeling like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't put much stock into it. I just remembered it. Like, that is really weird that I feel like that. And of course, again, it didn't mean anything. But I remembered it because it was so dramatic when it occurred to me. Because it wasn't just a, I wonder what would happen if, you know, it wasn't I wasn't musing about it. It's just this strong sense, feeling, you know, a lot of things came with it. A thought, an emotion. And very matter of fact that, you know, I'm going to die. I think the exact thought was, I was sitting in the cafeteria at school, and the exact thought was, everybody in this room will outlive you.
Well, that could still happen.
No.
Oh.
No, it absolutely didn't happen. Well, for one thing, there were, you know, older people, like older teachers who have since passed.
They could have been cryogenic.
There have been friends of mine who have died since then. People I graduated with. There was one guy I went to school with who was in the room. I'm quite certain at the time he committed suicide shortly after we graduated.
All right, you're not a psychic.
No, but I did have a sense of when it would be. Also, it wasn't. It was like, you know, some part of the further back in my mind, it was as in like before you're 40 or whatever. Well, it just didn't happen. So.
All right, you're definitely not a psychic.
I'm just saying, that's the thought that came into my head. Some people
say it's a glitch in the Matrix. Others would say that was the point at which timeline split. Something happened.
You know, funny you should say this, mention this, because something weird happened to me this week. Really weird. Okay, so my wife comes home. And she starts talking to me about a subject that it doesn't matter what the subject is.
Was it aha?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
It would have explained something.
But
as an insight,
I had no idea what she was talking about. Like, I was convinced that she and I had never talked about this subject before, but she was telling me, you know, we've talked about it a lot.
I've had this several times.
Well, later on, I remembered it completely. Like,
oh,
it wasn't a problem. But this. But for a second, I just did not understand what she was talking about. Not just that, though. I'd been watching a video before she came home, and she interrupted the video, so I just decided I'd watch the whole thing later. It was a news thing, oriented thing. I was watching it again, and I could have sworn that it was different. than what it was when I watched it before. Just slightly. Like, there were, like, the commentators were joking around about some things, and they joked about similar things, but not the exact same things. And it felt so weird. And I thought, wow, this is really bizarre. Now, later, not only...
Somebody's fucked up the Truman Show.
Later, not only did I remember what my wife was talking about, and I didn't have any problem connecting it to other things, but I rewatched that news segment, and it didn't look strange at all anymore. All
right, so they piped back in the proper inhalants
well,
to your room.
Well, obviously, what was happening was that there was some neurological thing going on that was making me think it was different or whatever, even though it wasn't really. And I don't know. I've always thought that's what deja vu is. Like, you just feel like you remember it, but you don't really. But your brain tries to tell you, since you feel like you remember it, that you must remember it. So maybe it was like an extended deja vu or something where...
I've recently read, like, I think there's a they figured out a plausible scientific explanation for deja vu, which is something with basically your brain trying to react appropriately and...
Right. I always just thought that since we know your brain is constantly working to try to make things make sense, that's why we see optical illusions all the time, I always thought it was just, well, you feel something and it's a misfire, but your brain doesn't know that, so it tries to... Your brain is thinking, oh, I'm feeling now like I'm remembering this, so I'm going to act like I'm remembering this when you're not. Or... vice versa, you know, like, oh, I'm feeling like this is the first time this has happened, so I'm going to act like this is the first time this has happened, even though it's not.
Because I watch so many old, crappy movies, and also specifically old, crappy exploitation and horror films, and because I'm not always sober when I do it, and because it's such a, it's like how we talked about, there's like 7 plots to horror movies and stuff like that. Every time I'm watching these, I'm constantly having deja vu.
Well,
and in the exact same movie, I'll be like, I know for a fact I've seen that scene before. And then the next one, I'm like, and I know for a fact I've never seen this before.
Well, but then there's those situations like when you came and you were telling me about that Simpsons episode.
That was hilarious. We've referenced this before. I don't know if we ever entirely explicated it. But I would go, when William was my boss, I would go and tell him about Simpsons episodes.
Right.
Because, you know me, Simpsons. And he didn't watch The Simpsons.
No.
So it was all new to him. So even when I would see reruns, I'd be like, oh, is this classic one? He's like, I don't know that one. And I'd be like, oh, you got to hear. So anyway, so one time I'm watching, because this was when I was done. Hold your shit together, man. I was done watching so them funny. Regularly when they aired new. So one night I caught an episode that was from the current season that I had not seen, and it was very rare for me to see an episode I hadn't seen, and I thought it was funny, and I don't really remember the specifics except Milhouse was involved, but I went to tell you about it the next day, and you're like, you already told me about this, and I'm like, how? I actually had, this was new to me.
I just saw it last night, I couldn't have seen it.
I've never seen this one, and I was getting pissed. Until I believe you supplied a detail I had not told you, and then we're both like, whoa.
Yeah, I told you something
and
about
like,
it.
What the fuck?
And so you're like, well, you know, so I had to have told you because that's what I was saying.
But I couldn't have. What is happening? And then I had to actually start working. But then later I get an IM from you, and you're like, I just remembered last weekend my brother showed me
this episode
on his computer. So I saw it then, and I was like, fuck you! And he's like, this is like literally the only time I've seen an episode of The Simpsons, and it was this one.
And it was this one.
I was like, god damn it. So, so I lost years of my life in that interchange due to all the stress.
That was so weird.
So I'm going to live less long, but in answer to your question, Beth, because we are just about out of time here, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm going to live very long because my health is not great, but I am working at it, and I've got pretty good genes, at least on one side of the family.
Like, you know, my dad's a big guy, too. He's in his 70s, and he's still going strong. Yeah. So.
But it's funny, what seems like, that's a good ripe old age is changing as I get older.
No, that's right.
Dying in the 70s, I'm like, that soon, really? Oh, shit. So, yeah, that's a
little weird. I don't know how long, for me, I'm
working on starting to accept the idea that I'll die somewhere between the next second and, you know, 106. And that has to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something that I work a lot on these days.
I have a congenital heart condition that will probably require surgery. You know, this used to be something I talked about, like, oh, it's going to be way off into the future. Now,
this Sunday.
It's not impossible that sometime in, you know, my 50s it'll have to happen. Probably more like my 60s.
Oh, yeah, at some point I'm definitely getting prostate cancer. Of course, yeah. To be fair, at some point most guys nowadays do.
So, and I'll have to have one or two of my heart valves replaced at that time. And anything can happen then, you know, because it's heart surgery. and then, of course, you have to be on blood thinner or whatever, depending on what kind of valve you get. So, you know, all of that stuff could shorten my life. But see, the thing is, my grandmother had the same surgery, and she lived to a fairly old age, although she got dementia, and she spent, like, 15 years of her life not even knowing who anybody was.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's another thing that's in my genetic pool, so I'll have to worry about that.
You don't read the Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal comic, do you?
No.
You probably should. It's replacing XKCD as my favorite in that thing. They had a bit recently where it was a ninja school, and the guy said, "You've all finished and you've graduated, so now I will show you the spot of death. If you touch it, someone dies." And he showed him on a model, and it's the anterior vena cava. And they're like, "What? But that's inside the heart." And he's like, "Yeah, but if you touch it," it's like, "Yeah, but if you touch any of the chambers of their heart with your finger, they're gonna die." And he's like, "I didn't say it was an easy spot to get to. I just said it was a spot that if you touch it, they'll die."
Okay, well, so. Yeah, I don't. I mean, of course, a lot of things that I watch, but, you know, it's the health news things I see. Everyone's talking about how, oh, we're going to figure this out. We're going to figure that out. There's going to be a cure for this. And they're just sure that everybody who's alive today is going to live at least 120 or some crazy stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's true.
I'm not buying that futurist bullshit, but they are, like, we find new ways to die all the time.
Yeah, right.
And people are dying, and people are still dying. Like, the life expectancy is creeping up, but it's creeping up real slow.
Yeah, real slow.
But they are curing every goddamn thing.
Yeah, well,
like,
you know,
the number of people I know now who had cancer and now they're fine.
It's ridiculous. I'd love to live a lot longer, but...
Yeah, I'm cool with living for quite a while.
Who knows?
Jesus Christ, we can't afford to live long.
All right. That little sigh of frustration when I first said I'd like to live a long time, too real. Too real.
Yeah, and she even talked to Jesus about it. That's...
Man. Speaking of Jesus, I have a new role-playing idea. But we're over time, so I'm going to talk about it another time after I've done it probably, which won't be till June. So anyway, Beth, that's how long we're going to live, and long enough to finish this episode so that you guys can listen next week where we'll have another episode. We might be dead. It might just be EVP the whole time. You'll have to, like, rewind it and do it again.
That's a great idea.
It'll just be static until you rewind. Yeah, so be sure to talk to your headphones and listen for a response next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.